Hello, and welcome once again to the Chemical Watch News and Insight Podcast, part of Inhesa's broader suite of intelligence offerings. As always, the podcast is hosted by members of the Chemical Watch News and Insight team, where we aim to provide you with fresh insights into the developments taking place in the world of chemicals management. I'm Senior Editor Terry Hyland, and today we're on to the third of our special edition going behind the headlines of our 2024 Global Outlook series of articles. Today, I'm joined by our Asia Managing Editor, Allison Carter. Hello, Allison.
Hi, Terry.
And also with us is our reporter for Asia, Alexandra Warren. Good to have you, Alexandra.
Thanks, Terry.
And we also have our science editor, Andrew Turley. Hey, Andrew.
Hi, Terry.
All right. Well, a hearty welcome to everyone. As our list of speakers today suggests, we'll look at chemicals management in China and Taiwan, as well as some key scientific issues that could impact regulatory work in different jurisdictions. But first, we'll start with India and with Allison. So Allison, if you could, walk us through where things are on India's work to implement overarching chemicals management regulations.
Thanks, Terry. Yeah, well, it's 4 years since the release of the fifth draft of India's overarching chemicals management law, and we are still waiting for it to come into force. In a way, similar to the EU's REACH regulations, it's expected to include a high level of protection for human health and the environment and regulate chemicals manufacturing, use, imports into the country. However, there have been several reasons cited for the postponement, including concerns that regulation change could cause disruption to India's chemical industry and issues still following on from the COVID-19 pandemic. However, progress may well come in the second half of the year following India's general election, and it's worth industry taking this time to prepare and identify obligations that will come in with these rules. For example, businesses not based in India will need to work with an authorised representative in a similar manner to that found on the EU REACH system. Unfortunately, though, the delay has added to the uncertainty over which version of GHS classification and labelling rules India is going to adopt. The fifth draft states the country will align its hazard classifications with the eighth revision. However, the UN continues to update GHS, and the 10th version was published in 2023. So we will need to wait and see on all of that.
Yeah, thank you for that overview, Allison. Well, then let's turn to something where there is no wait. India recently rolled out its Chem India platform for collecting chemical data. Why is this a significant development, and what do companies doing business in India need to know?
Yeah, as you say, it rolled out its Chem India platform for collecting and compiling chemical data in October last year. The aim is to provide a comprehensive list of many substances, such as organic, inorganic substances, alkali, chemicals, dyes, pigments, polymers, etc., to mention a few. And it's expected it will save companies the cost of collecting and storing this data. The focus, according to the Department of Chemicals and Petrochemicals, is improving accuracy and the efficiency of managing and interpreting data. And this will help, in turn, policymakers at national and regional levels. The Indian Chemical Council and the DCPC are helping to support companies using it to submit data. And some 15,000 chemical and petrochemical businesses are expected to use the portal to submit data monthly on all chemicals manufactured in India. However, it's worth noting that only data on commercial chemicals is currently needed, with data on research and development chemicals currently exempted. Companies trading or distributing chemicals are also not required to submit data currently, but this, of course, may change in the future.
Well, thanks, Allison. So definitely worth keeping an eye on those requirements. And it's truly not a discussion of chemicals regulation until we get a lot of acronyms in there. So thank you for throwing in the DCPC and ICP.
Oh, I can keep going, Terry.
Yes, I'm sure we all can. But back to the Outlook article on India specifically, you talked about the country's use of quality control orders for substances that are deemed to pose a risk to human health or the environment. Can you tell us a little bit for the podcast, what are these quality control order, or I guess, what do they require and what we're expecting to see this year?
QCOs, as they are in acronym language, are issued if a substance is deemed to be a risk to the environment or human health. And once issued, manufacturers and importers need to obtain a license from the Bureau of Indian Standards, or BIS, to be able to work with the substance. After seeing the government defer many QCOs in recent years due to various reasons, including staff shortages, slowdowns from COVID-19, backlog of applications, etc., India has started this year more positively and has actually confirmed QCOs for 10 chemicals, all in force this month, one QCO for polyethylene, which is used in moulding extrusions, effective from 4th of January, and QCOs for 5 polymer products, which will come into force on the 3rd of June. Multiple consultations are underway for other chemicals, so there seems to be definite momentum building on that.
All right. Well, yeah, we'll have to keep watching this space, as they say, to follow those developments in India. So thank you, Alison.
Thank you.
And now we'll keep the momentum going on into China, where the government continues to work on a new pollutants action plan. So, Alexandra, turning to you first, how does China define new pollutants, and what can we expect from the Ministry of Ecology and Environment?
Sure. So China defines new pollutants as toxic chemicals with severe health or environmental concerns. And this includes persistent organic pollutants, or POPs, endocrine disruptors, and antibiotics controlled by international conventions. In May of 2022, China State Council published a new pollutants action plan, which laid out objectives and goals for chemical management policies up until 2025. And they've been making progress on that over the last 2 years. Under the action plan, these new pollutants will be subject to various control measures, such as restrictions or bans, and the plan also included developing an overarching chemicals framework that will sit above ME Order 12 and will control both new and existing chemicals, but there was no timeline or deadline set for that. Another part of the plan was creating new guidelines and revising existing technical guidelines for various things, such as risk assessments, socioeconomic benefit analysis, and hazard testing, and other things like that. At the end of last year, the MEE and local environmental protection authorities completed the first round of surveys on basic chemical substance information, and they have also completed their investigation of the first batch of priority chemical substances subject to environmental risk assessment, which are known as PACs. So this year we can expect the result of the surveys and the risk assessments of the first batch of PACs to be published. And the industry should definitely keep an eye on this area, because this may lead to more restrictions and bans.
Yes, thanks, Alexandra. So it'll be interesting to see the results of the assessments from that first batch. Now, manufacturers and importers in China have to register chemicals with the National Registration Center of Chemicals. And soon there will be a new QR code requirement. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes, absolutely. So the idea is that a QR code will be added to labels on how to test chemicals. This means that downstream users will be able to scan the QR codes through an app, either WeChat, which is China's instant messaging on social media app, or the Hazardous Chemicals Registration app. And then through that, they will be able to see the chemical identity and the safety information, such as chemical name, emergency handling information, safety data sheets, and so on. As you mentioned, manufacturers and importers of hazardous chemical products have to register the chemicals with the National Registration Center of Chemicals. The plan is that once you register a chemical through the online platform, it will generate a QR code for you that links to the chemical information, and then you'll print that out on your labels or stick it to the packaging directly. So far, a pilot QR code system has already been implemented in Guangdong province. Shanghai has just announced that they are also implementing one. So by the end of this year, Hazchem Enterprises in Shanghai will have to implement some kind of system to ensure that these codes are on their labels for hazardous chemicals and products. which are going to circulate in the city. And this will probably be followed by a national rollout, perhaps, in 2025. So companies should definitely keep an eye on that.
All right. And so the term pilot project can sound small in scale, but the ports we're talking about here, Shanghai and Guangzhou and Guangdong province, are pretty big ports. Is that right?
That's right. Shanghai is perhaps the busiest port in the world in terms of tonnage of cargo handled, bigger than the largest ports in the EU and the US combined. And Guangzhou is among the largest in the world as well.
Yeah, no, fascinating stuff. So it would seem Texas here in the US will have to reevaluate its famous phrase where everything's bigger in Texas, at least for the ports. I think the biggest US port, by the way, is Los Angeles. So not even Texas or anywhere, Houston or anywhere around. Anyway, we will we'll venture across the Taiwan Strait to Taiwan. And companies there have until the end of this year to complete the registration of the first batch of priority existing chemicals under the island's Chemicals Management Law, which is the Toxic and Chemical Substances of Concern Control Act. Excuse me. Alexandra, can you tell us what are the highlights we expect to see out of Taiwan this year?
Yes, so there are a few different things that we can expect to happen in Taiwan over the next year and beyond. As you mentioned, the deadline for standard registration for the first batch of priority existing chemicals, or PECs, is the 31st of December this year. Under standard registration, businesses are required to submit data for 9 items, and the first 7 must be submitted before the deadline. The 8th and 9th are hazard and exposure assessments, and these can be submitted at a later date, but that date has not yet been decided. It is worth noting that the December deadline includes the time needed for the authority to review the submission, so the de facto deadline is before then, sometime in the summer, ideally. As well as this, last year Taiwan's EPA was upgraded, and it's now the Ministry of Environment, which gives the department more powers and resources to manage chemicals, among other things. And the Toxic Chemicals Substances Bureau was upgraded to become the Taiwan Chemicals Administration. Because of this, we could see chemicals management start to be simplified or harmonized in Taiwan in the next few years. Currently in Taiwan, as in many other countries, chemicals are managed by a number of different agencies, depending on where they're used or found. For example, Taiwan's FDA regulates cosmetic products. And there are 19 different acts controlling or managing different groups of chemicals. One of the tasks of the new Taiwan Chemicals Administration is acting as a so-called single window for chemicals management in the island territory. The administration hasn't announced any specific plans yet, but this harmonization and simplification could come in the form of a new overarching act that would encompass all chemical management in Taiwan, but we will have to wait and see. Also this year, the Ministry of Environment is expected to add 2 more substances to the list of chemicals of concern. These are 2-chloroethanol, which is used as an intermediate solvent, and poses a risk to food safety, which is why there are plans to regulate it, and gamma-butyrylactone, which is known as GBL, and this is a drug precursor. If they are added to the list, companies manufacturing them or importing, exporting, selling, etc., will need permits and registration and approval documents from the authorities to continue those activities.
All right. Well, thanks again, Alexandra. And I think that harmonization and simplification would certainly be welcome, but lots to watch this year for sure. And now, and with my apologies to Monty Python, so now for something completely different, let's turn to the scientific sphere, which certainly underlies a lot of the regulatory actions we see around the globe. And we'll focus first at concerns in the EU about low levels of participation in ECHA's Risk Assessment Committee. So Andrew, turning to you, can you tell us a little bit about what's going on here and what it means?
Sure. So last year we had this warning from ECHA about how its expert committees, the Risk Assessment Committee, RAC, and the Socioeconomic Analysis Committee, SEAC, are both running low on members, resulting in what the agency calls competence gaps. That is where the committees don't have an expert with a background in that particular area of specialism, although they may still have people with very relevant experience. Mm-hmm. Now, this might sound like quite a dusty administrative issue, but of course, these committees deal with very important regulatory mechanisms, such as restriction and authorization under REACH, as well as harmonized classification under CLP. So if they don't have enough people, or they don't have people with the right knowledge and experience, it does raise questions about the conclusions they are reaching on chemicals of concern. So that's a problem. Unfortunately, it's arguably made worse by RAC's workload for 2024, which is set to be heavy. Top of the agenda is the proposed universal PFAS restriction, the biggest restriction we've seen by some margin in terms of the number of substances and uses it covers. It is also, as I'm sure our listeners are very aware, extremely controversial. The consultation delivered something like 6,000 comments, I think. So that gives you some indication of the extent of stakeholder interest. And many comments came from other parts of the world as well, which is something to note. So ECHA has already missed the procedural deadline for the RAC opinion because of the complexity of the proposal. That was the 22nd of December last year. Because of all the comments and the size of the proposal, I don't think anyone was expecting that deadline to be met. But nonetheless, it is significant because ECHA doesn't make a habit of missing such deadlines. And altogether, this is pointing towards a lot of work. At the same time, RAC is also facing some considerable technical challenges in the form of harmonized classification proposals that might arrive this year based on the new CLP hazard classes adopted last year. Again, it's a topic that I'm sure listeners are fairly familiar with. Endocrine disruption, both for the environment and human health, is in there, as well as four endpoints covering persistence, mobility, and bioaccumulation, which are, brace yourself for some more acronyms, PMT, BPVM, PBT, and VPVB. Right, those endpoints have not previously been subject to the CLH process, the harmonized classification process, meaning RAC will be breaking new ground there, which is, you know, implies significant work. These proposals aren't here yet, it should be noted, but member states have officially registered their intentions to submit some. So that's Germany, Austria, and France. France has registered multiple ones, with submission of the proposals expected later this year. So, yeah, that's another issue for RAC. And of course, we're still waiting for the REACH revision. If that arrives this year, there'll be plenty of work for RAC in that as well. Although it should be said that it is possible that any radical changes to the authorization and restriction mechanism, I think at one time stakeholders were talking about whether the two could even be combined. I don't know if that's off the table or not. But yeah, any radical changes to that could theoretically result in less work for RAC, which might provide some mitigation.
Yeah, well, definitely lots of work ahead regardless. And despite those concerns over the competence gaps that you, as you had said, Andrew. Now, despite these concerns on the ECHA, committee participation, the EU has moved ahead with the CLP revision, adopting new hazard classes. And that sounds straightforward enough, but these changes present several technical challenges. Can you talk about what lies ahead here, Andrew?
I think you might be joking somewhat when you say that it's straightforward. Maybe it is from a procedural point of view, but the scientists would tell you it's definitely not straightforward. As you say, the European Commission adopted the annex changes to CLP last year, bringing in the new hazard classes. Endocrine disruption, both for human health and the environment, plus four classes covering persistence, mobility, and bioaccumulation. I'm not going to go through those acronyms again. Those will apply from the 1st of May 2025. But in the intervening time, companies will have to work out how the data they have corresponds to the criteria given in the legislation. And certainly, you know, companies will be looking at this now through 2024. In the case of PBT and BPBB, so that's the bioaccumulation one, there's already a lot of groundwork laid because there are established validated tests covering persistence and bioaccumulation. It's been argued that those tests are not that great, but they are at least there. And importantly, they're in use. So regulators and companies will already have very relevant experience of using data generated from those tests through REACH, because the CRP criteria are almost identical to those for identification of substances of very high concern. But the situation is quite different for the other classes. Mobility is an entirely new endpoint for regulation of industrial chemicals. So that one will be interesting. And probably the big one is endocrine disruption, because we know the stock of validated test methods available today is of limited use. So you would think that would put slightly more emphasis on academic studies, which typically don't conform to the standard methods, the internationally validated methods. And that will increase the likelihood of dispute over how data should be interpreted. Also, in any case, endocrine disruption is inherently just very complex, involving myriad biological molecules and processes. So interpretation is challenging anyway. Experience of the biocidal products regulation will help to some extent, because endocrine disruption has been part of that legislation since 2018, and the criteria are largely the same in both pieces of legislation, with one big difference. Unlike in the biocidal products regulation, in CLP, there's a category two for quote unquote suspected endocrine disruption. NGOs fought hard for that particular subcategory in the face of strong opposition from industry. So don't be surprised if there's some fireworks when it is deployed, you know, when it becomes relevant. A lot of this will be happening behind the scenes as most companies think about what the impacts are for their businesses. Most will be waiting for the official ECHA guidance on the new hazard classes, which is expected by the middle of this year. We don't have a specific date for that yet. But when that lands, that will also be very significant.
All right. Well, thank you, Andrew. Yeah, it's those the behind-the-scenes actions that always make these scientific issues, I think, fascinating to watch. So appreciate that overview. Well, let's end with a brief international update, if we could. The International Agency for Research on Cancer, IARC, will set new priorities this year for its monographs program. Can you tell us a little bit about what are these priorities and why they're important, Andrew?
Yes, certainly. So IARC sets its priorities for a period of 5 years, and the current set covers 2020 to 2024. The key date for everyone to put in the calendar is the 26th of March. That's the start of the meeting for the advisory group for recommendations. That group will consider the candidate agents. That's the word that's used. Agents is a slightly odd word, perhaps, but that's what ARC prefers. The candidate agents for 2025 to 2026. What will it be considering? Well, agents can cover quite a range of things. Mostly they are chemicals, which of course is why we're interested. But they can also be occupational exposures or physical or biological agents or lifestyle factors, such as smoking. At the most recent prioritization meeting in 2019, the advisory group reviewed 170 candidate agents and selected 31 as high priority, with the rest either medium or low. It's those high priority agents that IARC is likely to select for evaluation, but it does retain some flexibility. For example, it's evaluated perfluorooctanoic acid, PFOA, and perfluorooctane sulfonic acid, PFOS, last year, despite neither of those being on the list of priorities for that period.
All right. Well, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what IARC puts forward in late March, like I said, that March 26th date. But we will have to stop things there. So thank you, Andrew. And a big thank you as well to Allison and Alexandra. Thank you all for joining us. That was a nice wide-ranging discussion today, from India's work on chemicals management to China's new pollutant action plan, and then getting into the scientific challenges ahead in the EU and beyond. And thanks as well to all of you listeners who've tuned in. It is truly a pleasure to talk about these issues with you, and hope you find it useful as well. And don't forget to visit the inhesa.com website to learn more about our suite of compliance solutions, as well as the news from Chemical Watch News and Insight. And that news includes our 2024 Global Outlook series of articles. And those are available at product.inhesa.com/news-insight. And of course, we hope you can continue to join us for future episodes, where we'll dive into the biggest news of the day in chemicals management and more. And until next time, goodbye.